Yeah. Hey. Hey. Well. Yeah. Goonies never say die. You know what time it is. We got horror suspense. Listen, Kevin Trapp digging in the bin. Dirty dancing in Encino, man. Never know what you'll find in Uncle Doug's bin. What's in the bin? Yeah, Uncle Doug's bin. He's got all these clicks from way back when. Marty McFly and the DeLorean. Gotta love the Cage and whatever he's in. Face off snake guys, you know it's a win. What's in the bin? Yeah, Uncle Doug's bin. What's in the bin? Yeah, Uncle Doug's bin. What's in the bin? Yeah, Uncle Doug's bin. What's in the bin? Yeah, let's begin.
Welcome to Uncle Doug's DVD Bin, the podcast where we take your favorite movies, give you some facts, tell you the plot, and there might even be a few jokes along the way. I'm your host, Kevin.
I'm your host, Travis.
And I'm your guest host, Haley.
Whoa! Kevin? What? You didn't tell me?
I did tell you to clean up all these wrappers for cheesy gordita crunches we was having a company.
I thought it was just your mom.
You know my mom has never been interested in... Stop embarrassing me in front of Haley. God, Jesus. Travis?
Hey.
Sorry.
Does anyone have a cheesy gordita crunch for me?
Kevin, give her that one in your pocket.
Oh, yeah. No, you know what? I've got the special one that's been on the radiator for like 15 minutes. This sucker is nice.
Perfect. Perfect.
Got a little... Radiator gordita.
Yeah. You know, I actually have a Baja Blast that's still semi-cold.
Excellent. Excellent.
Listen, we know how to treat a guest here at Uncle Doug's house. That's all.
It's
I'm
delicious.
Saying.
I'm tasting it right now. That's great.
Well, man, Haley, we are so excited to have you on. Number one, because you're immensely funny. Number two, because you're super talented. And number three, because we're lonely.
Yeah. In that order.
In that order. Exactly. I always feel weird like asking like who is a Haley. I ask that a lot, actually. Yeah. It's one of the questions that every day I just ask to myself.
Who is a Haley? Like, just Haley specifically.
Yeah, open to the universe. Not doesn't mean anything other than I just... It's sort of like one of those things that centers me, you know, just asking who is a Haley. But in this case, I actually do mean who is a Haley.
Man. You know, I ask myself the same question every day also. So, yeah, I am a person, first and foremost. And I like to make things. I'm what one may call an artist. Oh, jury's out. I like to paint. I like to make prints. I like to... enthusiastically look at the world with a creative eye.
Man, that sounds amazing. I very much think that you're an artist. In fact, I would refer to you as an artiste, and if anybody disagrees with us, Travis will fight them in an Arby's parking lot.
But specifically Arby's.
Yeah,
if it's another parking lot, you win.
Okay. Now, maybe the one by your house, though, Travis, so you don't have to travel really far. If anybody disagrees, if you could just meet Travis in the Arby's near his house, that would be really super convenient. But
it's because Arby's has the meats, and that's where I fight best, is near meat.
All right, I made a note of that. So,
thanks.
Oddly enough, that's exactly what your summer camp counselors used to say about you, Travis.
Wait, which part?
That you fought well near meat.
Oh, yeah.
They put it on that t-shirt, remember?
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I still have it. It barely fits. It was weird to wear around as an 11-year-old.
Anyway, Travis's meats aside, Haley, where would people be able to find all the awesome artwork that you create?
Oh, goodness. Well, you can see my stuff on my Instagram, which is Quiet Revelry Studio. And that is also the name of my Etsy shop. So if you care, go have a gander.
And that's her slogan. Mm-hmm. And you can find all of that down in the show notes that we have, Kevin.
Wait,
did you know that we had those?
When did we start doing show notes?
Yeah, so like if you open up a podcast, every time it's going to have words with it. Down in the words is what I'm talking about. So that's a show note.
Wait, I thought you actually just wrote them down on a notepad and showed them to people when they had questions.
Nope.
Oh, wow. Uncle Doug is going to be really upset about that. Like, he does not want information about him written down on the internet. That's how the government gets you.
It is every time.
Okay. All right. That's fine. It's fine. Not a problem. I just won't tell him and we'll just move on. Just talk a little bit quieter when you mention the show notes. And actually, speaking of Uncle Doug, Haley, people don't believe Travis and I. In fact, they jeer us in the streets. We have had things thrown at us. I had a half-eaten yogurt thrown at me just the other day because people think that Uncle Doug isn't real. And you are in a unique position to be able to confirm that he is, in fact, a real person.
I am. And you know what? And I can understand both sides because for a while, I also didn't believe. Felt very skeptical. And
you also threw a half-eaten yogurt at me, which, by the way, thanks.
I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that yogurt. But yeah, we just recently became acquainted just a couple weeks ago. And oh my gosh, it's still on my mind. I can't stop thinking about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So you may know of this local establishment here in Roanoke called Red Palace.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. It is absolutely delicious Chinese buffet. Beautiful architecture, by the way. So I was there. I walked up to all the steaming food with my plate ready to load it up. And I arrive at the tray with all the crab rangoons, except they were all gone, but for one, one lonely little rangoon.
Which, by the way, totally not normal at Red Palace. They're very generous with the food. That must have just been very busy.
Yeah, they're normally really on it, but busy day it was. And I reach for it. Another hand reaches for it. I look up and I find myself looking into the eyes of an angel. I find myself looking through time and space and the universe, the multiverse even.
Oh my God, I didn't know you met Patrick Swayze.
Oh, I didn't realize Uncle Doug and Patrick Swayze shared some physical features.
Oh my God, it was Uncle Doug.
It was Uncle Doug. It was him.
Oh my God.
And I just knew. I knew in my heart that it was him. I heard a voice, a disembodied voice, speak in my thoughts and say, "This is Uncle Doug." And he insisted that I have the last rangoon. I accepted. And then we shuffled off beside the sauces and proceeded to have the most beautiful conversation about our shared passion of the Red Palace and of healing and neuroplasticity. And I'm still just in awe. It was very special.
My God.
He exists.
Kev, how long has Uncle Doug been working at the Red Palace? Not long.
Well, it's right after he started dating Trish. He needed to make a little extra just to treat his lady the way he wants to. I don't know if Uncle Doug might have mentioned that to you, Haley. He has a lady friend now.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that makes sense based on some of the things he was saying.
Yeah. Met her at the Red Palace, I think.
Yeah. No. He took her to the Red Palace after their first date at the Hardee's. That's where you're getting
that. That's right.
Yeah, you're getting that.
That's right.
Mixed up. He actually met her down to the VFW.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Trish is, she's a card. She's one. But that is amazing that you guys forged a friendship over Crab Rangoon. I'd like to say that's the first time I've heard that about Uncle Doug, but I'm going to tell you it's not.
It did not seem like his first time.
What was the first thing that ran through your mind when you heard his voice?
I thought, this person has a magical soul, and I want them to read Charles Dickens to me by a fire.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a beautiful thing. He did the whole Tale of Two Cities. He got the tale of both of those cities in for us. It was wow.
I'm very jealous.
Well, we tried to get Doug to commit it to audio since we have the ability to record him, and he said no, it would be less special.
That's a shame, but I respect it.
Well, Haley, I just we're glad to have you here. I know Uncle Doug is glad to have you here, and hopefully you guys can discuss neuroplasticity at more length than you were able to by the sauce bar. Mm. But by God, the man has some thoughts on it. I can tell you that. But
wow.
I'll tell you what else. The film that we're covering on this episode, The Fly, was released on August 15th, 1986, directed by David Cronenberg. Writers are George Langeling, Charles Edward Pogue. Of course, David Cronenberg added a little bit of his flair to it, starring Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, and John Gietz. Mm-hmm. Now, Haley, have you seen The Fly? I hope you have.
Oh, yes, I have. I love this movie so much. It is officially my second favorite movie of all time. Of all time.
Whoa. I'm gonna be honest. We sort of knew that you liked the movie, and we thought, hey, you're the perfect fit when we pulled it out of the bin. So
yeah,
because Travis hates it. He thinks that this is the worst movie that Goldblum has been in.
I Travis! First of all, Kevin, those are your words. I love The Fly. All day long, you were like, I can't wait to get on this podcast to make Haley feel stupid about the movie she likes, and I was like, Kev, you need more time.
That's
You need more time.
Oh, see, just a little more time. Travis, I saw this movie for the first time when I was probably like 10 or 11 years old. And even at that tender, callow age, I had already watched quite a few horror movies. So I felt like I rolled through this pretty without it really damaging my psyche until it gets to a spoiler for a plot, if you haven't seen the film, much like Travis hasn't, where Gina Davis has a larva come out of her during childbirth. And I remember as a kid just checking out at that point, be like, no, I'm good.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I would have handled this movie as a child. I didn't see this until well into adulthood. And yeah, it would have messed me up as a kid.
That was my favorite part. It was such a surprise because my money, if I had to put money, if there was a DraftKings on what was going to come out of her, I thought it was going to be a baboon. And I was going to be like, it's the circle of life. I was going to get so excited.
It was. So you thought they were going to break into song and dance with a baboon?
Yeah, because he already killed a baboon. What if another one comes into life and then the whole movie is just the baboon life cycle?
That was what bothered me the most, is like unregulated animal testing in a warehouse on the east side of town.
Yeah.
Like, is that? I don't like that.
I know.
My first thought was, I need to get a baboon guy.
You know, I also had thoughts about the baboon supply.
Just
like, where is the supply chain of baboons to this warehouse?
Always start with mice. You don't go straight to baboon.
Yeah. What? A baboon. Jump straight to a baboon.
Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, Kevin. Okay. Sorry. You've let this go on too long. Take hold of your podcast.
Is this Haley's? Haley, this is your podcast.
It's
you take
my
hold
podcast?
Of it. Yeah.
It is now.
Oh, God.
Travis, how about a little bit of those 6 degrees? Of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, if you don't know what that is, Travis is going to tell you right now. Actually, Haley's going to tell you because we've given her the podcast.
Oh, no. You know what, Travis? You can cover for me. I'll allow it.
Well, the 6 degrees of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, Kevin, I was thinking about this. We might not need to explain what this is every time if we called it something different. Maybe 6 degrees from the last episode.
You know, I don't like change, Travis, and I especially don't like change in front of company.
Fair. I'm just, you know what? I'll take it offline. I just wanted to
workshop it. Hey, if you've got any ideas on what we should call this segment, please do drop that into the Discord.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's because it all started on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre episode, but it is the degrees that separate the last movie we covered on Uncle Doug's DVD bin, which was Top Gun, and today's movie, The Fly. So now, Kev, I know you watched Top Gun recently because you and I recorded a podcast about it. You remember Tom Cruise in that movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You remember him, right?
Yeah.
He was flying the plane all dangerous, trying to kill people.
Yeah, no, he was super heroic and saved the day. I remember.
He was in Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman.
He was.
Okay, you know Dustin Hoffman. I don't think we've had a Dustin Hoffman movie in the bin yet, but maybe one day.
I hope so.
Dustin Hoffman was in the movie Hook with Gina Davis.
Shut up. Wait, Gina Davis was in Hook? No, wait, no, don't shut up. We have to actually record the rest of this episode. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But after that, you can shut up. Who was Gina Davis and Hook?
I'm blanking on that, too.
You remember her.
You didn't. I remember. She was so good in Hook. I really liked the way that she did things in Hook, especially that one line she has about the thing she said.
You know what?
So good.
So, you should never rely on ChatGPT to do your work for you.
Oh, snap. You went to ChatGPT all this time?
For sure.
Travis,
I didn't have time.
You made me curse on that. You know I am an upstanding, God-fearing, I say my prayers and take my vitamins, and you made me curse on this podcast.
No, I tell you where I'll admit fault. Wasn't in Hook with Gina Davis. Okay. He was in Tootsie.
Oh, okay. There it is.
All right. Did you ChatGPT that too? You sit on a throne of lies.
No, I Googled it and I wrote it down wrong. Oh. Stop being mean.
What you? God. You listen, don't you know hardworking artists on IMDb are putting out of work by or getting put out of work by ChatGPT?
I used IMDb. ChatGPT was a joke. Oh, I don't even know if you can use ChatGPT for this.
I bet you probably could. I'll try it. Yeah, try it right now. Try it right now, live right here on the episode, Travis. Because no one else cares what's it. Haley, are you okay with that? Since this is your podcast,
right? Am I okay with ChatGPT?
No, is it okay if Travis spends his time seeing if ChatGPT will connect the two movies for us?
As the owner of this podcast, I feel that I have no choice but to accept this.
It says Tom Cruise starred in Rain Man alongside Dustin Hoffman, and Gina Davis starred in the. It takes a longer route. It goes from Gina Davis to Thelma and Louise to Ocean's 11. We didn't need to bring all them into it.
Wow.
Well, it is 6 degrees of Texas Chainsaw Massacre until you just decide to change it without telling your co-host, Travis. But that's fine. And it would be good to get to 6 at some point. You know,
I feel you want to get to 6?
Yeah.
I thought it was like I have to get it before 6. I didn't know you wanted.
Oh, no. I thought it was 6 and over. You thought it was like 6 and under?
I thought it was as small as possible, God, maybe, within 6.
God, maybe you're right. Maybe we do need to talk about this. Why don't we ever talk anymore, Travis?
You want me to make... You want the 6 degrees? I have to go all the way around?
Yeah, like right on the money of like 6 degrees of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Come on, what is this, my job?
No. I mean, I did just get that new Lamborghini because of my money here.
I guess it is. It's like technically my job, but it's not like... Let's move on.
Okay. All right. Anyway, Travis, how about another thing that you do for this podcast? How about some of those preview reviews?
Well, this I did.
Okay. You sure?
Perfectly. All right.
Did you?
There's always going to be people who love it. I did. I looked them up on Letterboxd. Great site. Use it.
Okay.
People who love it. All right. We have Anna. She gave it 5 stars. February 21st of this year. So last week.
All right.
This is fresh. Yes. They say, this happened to a buddy of mine once. 5 stars.
What? They thought that their friend actually did their work, but they just ChatGPT'd it? Is that what happened to them, Travis?
Then we got people who are meh on it. This one's by Lauren. Mm-hmm. 3.5 stars. Lauren says,
already wrong.
I can fix him.
You know what? If I were going to try to fix a man, it would be Jeff Goldblum. And especially like 1980s Jeff Goldblum with that luxurious kind of hair. Like I could just like run my hands, you know, like sort of rake his hair back and then just down the back of his head, you know?
We got another 3.5 star from Renoa. This is October of last year.
Mm-hmm.
They say, I've never grimaced at a film as much as I did watching this, but holy... What an ending. Why did I sob?
3 stars? 3 stars, really?
Well, 3.5. 3.5.
3.5?
Yeah.
It's on the upswing.
This is the little half. Give it a little bump. Did you, when you watch this film, Haley, do you cry at the end?
No, I don't cry at the end. I don't. But I am moved. It's.
Do you say, I can fix him?
No. I don't. I feel like Jeff Goldblum doesn't need any fixing.
Oh. I mean, he turns into a giant fly. Like, that needs a little fixing.
Jeff Goldblum, not Sam Brundle.
Okay, okay, sorry.
Right.
Or sorry.
Sam. Brundle.
You're right.
Seth.
This is Brundle. An outrage.
Sherman Brundle? What's his name? People who are low on it. All right, not everybody even feels meh. Some people are grossed out. Ugh. Like Carly Jordan here back in summer of 2022. Mm. Carly's having a rough summer. She says, I need to vomit and then shower and then vomit again.
Completely unrelated to the movie, by the way. Yeah. Just
I feel like you can't just judge it based on how grossed out you are.
Right. The more grossed out I was, the better I thought the movie
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
I was like, this is insane.
Yeah. It's powerful.
You wouldn't think practical effects could get that gooey.
They're pretty gooey, dude.
They're super gooey.
Very gooey.
But anyway, I hope Carly got her shower and her vomit and then her shower. Or maybe all the vomiting and then did a shower. I think that's the right order of operation.
I think you vomit in the shower. Just
if you were a busy person, that would save you some time.
Mm-hmm. Then just stomp whatever, you know, on down. All right. Up next, we got Hugh Clark. This is from around Thanksgiving there, 2022. Hugh says, and I'm not, this is verbatim, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That make me sick. I hate it. 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 I'm going to watch Lego Batman.
Oh. Well.
Hugh had a rough time with the movie. Poor Hugh. He can't stomach it. Poor
I just
Hugh.
Feel sorry for him. Poor guy.
Yeah, I mean.
And in my mind, Hugh is 9 years old.
Oh, no. Even at 9 when I watched it, I was fine. Like, it didn't. I'm fine, guys. Everything's okay.
You do vomit in your hands a lot, yeah. But that's probably unrelated.
No, I do it in the shower and stomp it down. Travis, listen, you know I'm busy.
Stomp it.
Good. But that's it. That's all I've got. Oh. So we have more, at the end of the episode that reveal more of the plot, but just some general flavor there. People are most often sickened by the film, which is a shame.
I was just going to say I'm less offended by those reviews than I thought I was going to be.
Oh, okay. Mm. All right. Well, he usually saves the really savage ones for the end. So,
oh, okay.
You know, a right. little something to look forward to there. I mean, it is body horror, so like you probably should have some revulsion. Like that seems like if you've seen it a few times, you're like, okay, this part's kind of hilarious. But apart from that, maybe a little gross out. I don't know.
I think that's what the movie's going for. Yeah. I think if you watch it and you're like, oh, all of that was fine and normal, like I worry more about you at that point.
Listen, we've all had roommates. You know what I'm saying? But this film opens and it catches you off guard because it's sort of big classical score that's kind of behind the opening credits and title and that sort of thing. And it's a really juxtaposition for what the rest of the film is going to be. Or did you guys feel like it fit?
I don't remember. What was the...
It was very
it was very kind of peppy?
No, it was kind of like Wagner-y, but like swelling and then some like little like light notes in there. I was like, this is not, I would expect like sort of a stinger maybe, but like a little bit of synth music. I mean, it's the 80s, so maybe I'm just, you know, that's what I'm looking for. But it's a nice, really good kind of classical music intro. And I also, guys, this is where I learned, and I'm ashamed to admit this, but we're all friends. This is where I learned that Gina Davis spells her name with a G.
Gina.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
How did you think it was spelled?
I thought it was spelled like Gina, you know, like J with a J. Isn't that how you normally spell
Gina?
I've
never
Gina?
Seen Gina with or a like, J ever.
I'm sorry.
Me neither. I haven't.
Or like a J-E-N-A or like a G-I-N-A, but I didn't think
now
it was
I could
spelled
see a G-I-N-A.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that it was spelled phonetically how it's pronounced in the way that's like G.
Mm.
Like she could have just had a G. I didn't know that's how she spelled her name. Why are
like
you...
Like G-na. I got you.
I just...
We're getting into the details on this movie. We've already covered the score and the way Gina Davis spells her name.
I think that's as much as we need to know about the plot, really. But, and also like there's this like weird... I guess it's sort of like calling back to the genetic code or whatever, but you see this sort of like weird blobby stuff moving around, which kind of reminded me of an early 2000s screensaver. Turns out, guys, it's a science party. It's a science party the whole time.
There's you wouldn't believe how many science parties there are as a scientist. We're just all the time having parties, dude. Off the hook ones like this. Off the chain. They're not on anything. Hooks or chains.
Wow.
They're free of both.
Unattached
parties.
I am not a scientist, but could you invite me to some of the science parties?
There are no science parties, Kevin. It was a joke. We don't...
Nothing about you is real, Travis.
I know.
Nothing about you is real. Wow. Anyway, so Seth and Veronica are at this science party, and this is where they meet. Is this... Would you guys refer to this as a meet cute?
It's a meet something.
For me, you know, it's kind of him failing his way to success with Gina Davis. Like, I don't know if you guys like, and it picked up on like this for me when I'm like, the dialogue is just not, it's like two people talking at each other, not to each other. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't feel like the dialogue wasn't like the thing that they worked hard on. They were like, here's the idea. Guy turns into fly. Now we got to make a shit ton of costumes and puke. Let's go. And they're like, the movie's going to need words. They're like, well, write them later.
Oh, man.
Like, for-
I hard disagree. Hard disagree with you there.
Woo!
I think the dialogue is actually very well thought out and very grounded in something that feels natural and real. And, yeah, I think that initial conversation, you know, he's just like this guy that's been in his lab, just like obsessing over his stuff. So he's kind of like detached from social cues mm-hmm. and like how to have a conversation. And she's like, just like, okay, this guy's talking to me about a science crap, whatever. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just disinterested. So I don't know.
And I've seen a woman do that a lot.
Yeah. At your science parties. What changes her mind?
Have you seen this guy?
I mean, yes, it is Jeff Goldblum, but Jesus, he has to at least say one thing other than just being handsome with that like sweeping brown hair.
Changes her mind in terms of getting her to come to his lab.
Yeah, like all of a sudden, next scene they're like cruising home in her car, and like so something he says works. Is it the intrigue enough of like this is a mysterious science thing?
I get the sense that she feels like he's genuinely kind of intriguing and cute, and like Ooh. She's like the way he's kind of dropping these little hints about what he does is catching enough for her to investigate.
Little trail of romantic breadcrumbs. I like it. Well,
but is it strong enough to go inside
an abandoned warehouse with a clearly man you just met?
Serial killer abandoned house thing?
Yeah,
I feel like this is where he loses every woman he's brought.
Yeah,
right there in that parking lot
for sure. And you can see her like doubt, kind of like prickling there in her consciousness, but she just seems to like have this like confidence and curiosity and kind of just can tell that he's harmless at this point.
He's wearing a sport coat too, and like people wearing sport coats do look more trustworthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if they play a piano right in the middle of their serial killer warehouse. I'm immediately my guard's down. I'm like, oh, they like Chopin. That's fine.
I don't know. Was the piano playing less creepy or more creepy?
Every time it's more creepy, unless you're wearing a suit coat.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Fair enough. And then he makes murder threats. Like, he's like, come to my abandoned warehouse. I'm going to play the piano. Then I'm going to make murder threats. And then she's like, all right, whatever. Just knock it off. You're Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Yeah, you see the thought, like, cross her mind, like, is this dangerous? And she's like, it's all right.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Well, we get our first look during this scene at the teleportation / phone booth. She gives him some good ribbon about it looking like a phone booth, which is pretty fun. So he offers, he of course divulges that this is a teleportation machine, right? And so he's like, I will demonstrate this for you. Give me something unique that you own. Of all the things that she could give him, she gives him a stocking, which does make me think like, maybe she'd think he is a little sexy.
Mm-hmm. Which this scene, very sexy. I like this scene.
But is your stocking the most unique thing that you own? I mean, I'm not Gina Davis spelled with a G-E-E, so I can't say.
She does say that she doesn't wear jewelry. Mm-hmm. And I feel like her stocking is actually a really good choice because it's not, you know, her skirt or her shirt, you know, and it's not valuable. So like if he like fucks it up in some way, it's going to be all right. Like it's a good choice and it's sexy.
It is sexy. I did think like, oh, maybe you could go with the shoe. I thought that's what she was going to do. And it's like, yeah, you're just walking around with one shoe at that point if it doesn't work.
Shoe
and that's
can be
just
valuable.
Embarrassing.
Could be a really nice pair of shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
I do think it's weird, though. Like, I feel like I would go into the purse and look for something like an ink pen or some chapstick. But she just hands him, like, a wet stuff. She's like, here's this damp old thing I've been wearing.
Why would it be wet?
I don't know. They've been trouncing around the mud outside. Did you see outside? It's rough out there. Yeah. She's probably nervous. There's got to be a little bit of fear pee. Like, I don't know.
She seems cool as a cucumber to me.
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. If I went to a murder warehouse with Jeff Goldblum, I'd pee myself a little, but that's just... It's just a defense mechanism. I don't appreciate you guys laughing. But he activates his computer to show her the teleportation. What I love is that the computer recognizes his voice with the Like, he does his Jeff Goldblum and the computer's like, oh, yeah, it's legit. It's
the
him. Which was awesome. Of course, the teleportation happens, and her first inclination is like, is that a hologram? And I'm like, do holograms exist in this world? Is that part of canon in The Fly?
I don't know. That's a good question. I didn't think about that.
I mean, if you were asking me what was more plausible right now, a hologram or a teleportation, I'm with GEE Davis on this. I would definitely go with the hologram. But anyway, he does teleport the stocking, which clearly teleporting stockings going to change the world, guys.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you got, like, I was thinking, like, laundry chute, like, you wouldn't need it anymore. You just teleport all your stuff down to your laundry room.
What thing in your lives would change the most if teleportation was real?
Wait, of people? Because that's a big thing.
No, your life specifically.
But, no, I mean, like, can it teleport people or just my stuff?
Oh, yeah. Like, let's just say you've got full-on not turning you into a giant fly monster or making baboon goo. Like, it actually works. What's the biggest thing to change in your life?
I mean, I sell my car. I'm good.
That's true.
Right?
I could see my sister a whole lot more because she lives across the country. I have often wished
there you go.
That teleportation was a real thing for that reason.
So there's a lot of upsides. Any downsides?
No. Name one, Kev.
I mean, then you like, say there was somebody that you didn't want to go visit. Like, you don't have that, I just can't get there, you know? You just teleport, right? And, like, God, think about how bad people invade your privacy now with just, like, Facebook. I mean, can you imagine people hacking your telepod, and then they show up, and they're like, look at me, wop, 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 wop.
Yeah, then you'd have to teleport through ads and stuff because you'd get bought out by a major company.
Yeah.
Kevin, you ruin everything.
Well, also, like, at what point, if you break someone apart down to the molecular level and then you put them back together, are they even the same creature or being anymore?
We'll get to that. That's in the movie.
Okay, sorry. All right, my bad. It was all that talk of neuroplasticity earlier. I'm just trying to up my game because Uncle Doug's making us all look like idiots. But not you, Haley. Just me and Travis. Mostly Travis. But anyway, there's this really awkward moment where she pulls out her tape recorder and he's like, wait a minute. You're a journalist and you're doing journalisms? And she's like, yeah, dude, this is what I do. Like, what did you think was going to happen, Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah.
I think he was just excited for a little bit of the intimacy, a little bit of the socialization, the interaction. He lost track of who he was talking to, let too many secrets slip, trying to impress her with this sock teleportation device.
Yeah, he thought that he'd just charmed her and that she was just there because she was charmed.
Yeah, not because she wanted a paycheck.
I got it. So he saw the beautiful... Oh, by the way, I've just been saying actor names, and there are characters in this movie. Her name is Veronica. She ends up going by Ronnie. It must be her nickname. And, of course, Seth Brundle, which Travis got earlier. And one thing, too, that was kind of... I sort of love his motivation. This is one of the bits of writing I do like in it. Like, his whole inspiration for this entire project is that he gets motion sickness. Like, I thought that was, like, the best inspiration. Like, so, like just something everybody can identify with. Like, what is the nuisance thing in my life that I could science my way out of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love
But also, too, I feel like this teleportation device introduces the same anxiety that you'd get from flying, where it's like, sometimes people die. So I don't know.
But you still get on the airplane, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Or I could drive.
Or you could drive. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or teleport now. Well, anyway, they have an awkward moment where there seems to be at odds in terms of he didn't expect her to going to write this up, and she expected him to want her to write it up. So she sort of leaves in a huff. Well, I'm just going to say it's the next day, but some duration of time later, Ronnie is with her boss, also her ex-boyfriend, spoiler slash human resources questions here, Stathis. And she describes the experiment to him, and he says, look, you just got hustled. You know, I've seen the movie The Prestige. I know what's going on here. It's just a magic trick. You need to back off. Well, just like in The Prestige, it's also real here. And Seth actually shows up to her office, somehow tracks her down to Stathis's office. And Stathis is also kind of a jerk to Seth here because he thinks he's a con man. And Seth is like, you know what? I'm just going to leave my ex-girlfriend alone with this charming, handsome scientist Jeff Goldblum lookalike, and leaves.
Yeah. The Stathis guy. Stathis? Stathos? How do you say it?
Stathis.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Stathis.
Yeah, sounds like a Marvel villain. But yeah, he. You said he's kind of a jerk to Seth, but he's kind of a just
he's kind
a
of
jerk.
A jerk all around.
He's such a jerk.
He does have a character arc, though. Like, in the end,
a little
like,
bit.
Maybe he's kind of a jerk, but in the end, I mean, my man is
he does a couple things that are all right. Yeah. Yeah. He hangs out, but I think that's, I don't know. He hangs out in a way where it's like he also just won't go away. I think that's also a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get there. Let's just say he does have an arc. Like, he isn't always as bad as he is at this moment, but he's also kind of a jerk.
He is a very important character. That is for sure.
That is correct. Yeah. Well, at this point, Jeff Goldblum utters some very magic words to Ronnie, which Jeff Goldblum, Seth Brundle, to Ronnie says a very magic word, and that's cheeseburger. And she's like, all right, I'm back. I'm in. So they head out to get themselves some lunch. Does that work?
It does on me.
If someone did that to me, I would be like, yes, let's go.
Yep.
But
try it sometime, Kev.
It would be because they were referencing The Fly, so.
Oh, so they would need that knowledge if they just out of nowhere said cheeseburger. You'd be like, ah, no, 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 no.
I mean, they'd have to do the hands also.
Okay, got it. Got it.
That would, the hands too.
Just okay. Cheeseburger. No, cheeseburger gotcha. And hands.
Cheeseburger and hands.
Well, at lunch, we get some important information. First, that the teleporter does not work on living things because bad things happen. Seth then pitches, and Travis is always quibbling about how poorly written this movie is, but this, you got to admit, his pitch on the book here is incredible. Like, this is very well thought out pitch on changing her news story to a book. Am I right?
This is a great pitch.
I don't know. You're right. I didn't say these things, Kevin. You said these things. It's a perfectly fine dialogue.
Perfectly fine?
Why are you like this?
Did you say perfectly fine?
It's perfectly
yeah, why's your voice
acceptable?
Going up there, Travis? You seem awful defensive.
Fine? I don't know what.
Why did you say all those things in my notes that I wrote down, Travis?
The dialogue is fun. Yeah, the book thing was great.
Yeah, great pitch. Great pitch. And she acquiesces. She says, that is actually a pretty good idea. I could write a book on this whole experience. So back at Ronnie's place, she's sort of mulling things over. She goes home, and this is some straight-up creep behavior right here. Mm-hmm. Stathis is in her house taking a shower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is worse,
following someone into the bathroom like Tom Cruise in Top Gun, or just appearing in their home already showering.
That one's way worse.
Right?
That one's way worse. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I'm glad you guys clarified. Yeah. Just checking.
Just Travis, you can come to my house and take a shower. So, okay. Apparently they also lived together for a while, and that's why he has a key. However, he's been kicked out. Sorry, bud. Boundaries. And he's definitely kind of pervy. He is definitely very pervy here, and I'm not a fan.
Yeah, just like really possessive and condescending and horrible. Like just such a, yeah.
And they do.
Good beard and haircut, though, I got to say. I think
he does have a snappy
haircut.
He does all right. And
that's
beard
a good haircut. I will give him that.
Yeah.
He in this case also provides us with some good exposition. We learn that Seth Brundle is actually pretty dang smart, which we kind of already knew because he made a teleportation device, but it gets reinforced. And he also refuses to give back the key to her apartment. I like that.
Yeah,
I didn't like that either.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not a good guy.
That wasn't great.
No.
I don't know what we can do. What can we do about it? Can we stop him? I don't know.
Can we? I mean, I would recommend that she get an attorney and a good locksmith. But, you know, Gina with a GEE never asked me for advice or my phone number or for that key back. Anyway, back at the lab, this is where I don't even know that I can talk about this because I feel so bad for the baboon, but this is where we see the baboon getting to, and the poor little thing, he's just sitting there all calm. He's like, I trust you. You're my friend. You wouldn't do anything to harm me. And he's in the telepod and whoosh, he disappears. Computer does some stuff, flashy flashlights in the other telepod. And you think like maybe he's going to be okay, but you know. Mm. You know deep down. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be good.
And then it's 10 times worse than you think it's going to be. It is.
It's
horrible. They say David Cronenberg went through 12 baboons in this, making this movie. Until they finally got one to teleport. It took a long time.
Yeah. And then someone explained to him makeup, and he was like, what? I would never lie in one of my films. It looks kind of like one of the critters from The Thing, but just covered in more meaty spaghetti.
Yeah.
If you can. And it also has a bloody stump. Anyway.
Shout out to.
Baboon.
It's cool.
Shout out to Typhoon, the baboon. His name was Typhoon.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Man, moment of silence. Not on the podcast. Do it at home.
Yeah, do it at home. We've got stuff to do. But Ronnie interviews Jeff Goldblum, and he's posed very stoically next to his pod, and he is frustrated. He is not happy. He apparently did care for this baboon, not enough that he didn't put it in the life-threatening situation that he put it in, but he did care about this baboon and ultimately this baboon's brother, which is going to make an appearance later. And he says somehow he knows he's putting bad information into the computer. So now, Travis, you're a technology scientist. I mean, you go to science parties and stuff. What does that mean?
Wait, that I go to, what do the parties
mean?
Yeah, no,
what is it that, like, he's putting bad information into the computer? What does that?
Well, it means, so he's probably programming some code there, Kev, and there's a bunch of what they call whacks or hack slashes or backspaces or what have you, and he probably at some point in there had accidentally typed in, you're not going to believe this, he accidentally typed kill baboon.
Oh my God.
And,
you know, if it happened to you once, it happened 100 times. I really know that.
Bad habits die hard, and so do baboons. So he had to figure that out.
R.I.P. Typhoon. So he also, this is where he makes his first, and both him and Ronnie reference the flesh, and in a very, what I would describe, much as your chest hair is, Travis, troubling.
Mm.
And
yeah.
What does it mean?
It's thick.
What, like, Haley, you have a better grasp on most things in your life and the world than I ever will, but also the dialogue of this film. What do you think he means by that, that he doesn't understand the flesh or the computer doesn't understand the flesh?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure he even understands what he means. It's just, like, beyond the scientific understanding of what the biological makeup is of flesh, what makes something alive beyond its chemical makeup. That's my understanding.
Yeah. It's like he says he programmed the computer. The computer is only as smart as what he tells it. He doesn't understand life. Do people understand life? Because he certainly doesn't, but he's got to figure it out.
I mean, if I ever got one, I might. But
and the baboon shows up inside out. That's the thing that he says. Yeah. He's like, oh, it's inside out. It's like, remember Inside Out Boy on Nickelodeon? It's like him, but with more
meaty
tomato
spaghetti sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. In the next scene, they are hanging out. We find out that his character wears the same clothes all the time, although in a later scene, he is wearing different clothes. So easy there.
Yeah, that's true.
Blames that on Albert Einstein, but I'm pretty sure I saw Ernest P. Worrell pull the same move.
Yeah, and if you could hang out with Ernest or Einstein, it'd definitely be Ernest. I don't even have to
100%.
Ask, Travis.
Yeah, don't ask.
Haley, if you could hang out with Ernest P. Worrell or Albert Einstein, who would you be your go-to there?
Yeah, I laughed when you said that, but I honestly do not know who that person is. I mean, I know Einstein.
Wait, like... Ernest goes to camp. Ernest scared stupid.
Yeah, Ernest saves Christmas. Ernest goes to jail.
This is a blank.
Jim Varney
spot for me. Oh my God. I'm not familiar.
Kevin, we gotta have Haley back on when we do Ernest Goes to Jail. Oh, okay. That's the best Ernest.
Yeah, that is a good one. The dialogue even better in that one. Even better. You're gonna love it.
It's unreal. It's unreal.
Nobody turns into a giant fly that I remember though. So
I'm out
that's
then.
Something. Yeah. We'll. I tell you what. We'll add a scene. We'll sweet it, and we'll add a scene to it. Well,
okay, good.
they're hanging out after this monkey implodes and gets spaghetti all over the teleporter. Presumably, they've had to clean this mess up, and they go, you know what? I really want a steak. I really would like a nice steak.
Yeah.
Just monkey goo everywhere. And then Veronica, she be getting horny. There's no other way to say it. She just hops on the Goldblum, and they get to the business.
That might have been a little out of order. I think they did sex and then steak, like Christian people. I don't know that they did steak and then sex like heathens, Kevin.
No, but like they mentioned they want a steak, and then they do the bang bang, and then he goes, steak?
Right, which is naturally what happens. Also, there's a part where when they're doing the business, as you say, Kev, he gets something in his shoulder. What's just laying around on his couch? Why does he have this, like...
He's got a microchip or something.
What is that thing?
A chip.
Computer circuit.
It fucks him up good, dude.
He's like, I wonder where that was. Yeah.
And she's like, do you want me to put something on? He's like, no, I'll just bleed into the couch. Don't worry about it.
And he was like, I wondered where I put that. Really? your pull-out sofa. That's okay. All right. That's fair. I'm messy, too. I can't judge it.
These science bachelors are crazy.
Yeah. Then they have this, like, sort of weirdly horny, slightly cannibal scene where this is back in the bedroom where she's talking about how old ladies want to eat babies because of the flesh again. That seems to be sort of a running theme in this. And that's when he gets his big steak idea to try teleporting the steak.
Mm. Right.
So now, listen, I've never had sex, but if I did, I wouldn't imagine that I would talk about old ladies eating babies afterwards. Is that normal?
Okay, well,
Haley.
So I find this scene, like, this is, like, one of my favorite scenes, is, like, when they physically connect and, like, her being like, you're really cute, you know, or whatever that line is. I find that, like, such a genuine... Like, that feels so genuine, and the connection feels very real and sweet, actually. And she's just, like, really, you can just feel that she's truly into him. And yeah, like, the scene you're describing where she's, like, she's kind of, like, nibbling his arm, and she's like, I just want to eat you up. Yeah, I don't know. She's just, like, I feel like it does work. I feel like it, I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird. Though that could also be the case.
I mean, a little nibble on the tricep. I mean, I could see that. Now, they actually, apparently, Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum were an item while they were making this.
That is true.
So that romance is pretty earned. And apparently he also got very jealous in scenes with John Getz as Stathis, like to the point where Cronenberg's like, dude, you got to get off the set. Like, you
that
can't is
true.
Keep causing a scene. So maybe you're right. Maybe, you know what? Maybe a little bit of romance is happening. Well, they do a little bit of teleporting the steak. They try it out as an experiment. The teleported steak tastes weird. She says it tastes synthetic. And I really like that he said the steak is lost in translation. That just kind of cracked me up for some reason. And then he says he gets crazy about the flesh again, and he says, aha, I've got it. I've cracked the code. I'm going to teach that computer about the flesh.
Yeah.
Guys,
he makes it watch him jerk off, right? Nope. Is that worse than what you were going to say?
That's Jesus. I was going to say he showed it his floppy disk.
Oh.
Keep that part. Keep that one in. I'll laugh. We could edit this in. Kevin, that's good.
That's not a genuine laugh, Travis, and you know it. That's as real as your ChatGPT 6 Degrees of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
All right.
I'll let it go eventually. Season 15, I'll let this go. But he does just start plucking away on that computer, so you think he's got a pretty good idea. Well, Stathis, again, this is the half of the movie where he's a creepy jerk, and the other half is where he's like legitimately trying to help her through a difficult situation. So remember, we're dealing with Stathis that is a terrible jerk here. He's following her around, and then he approaches her in a store when she's just trying to get a sweet jacket for Seth. I mean, this is legitimately as cool as a jacket got in the 80s, and they have a little bit of a run-in in this store, and I'm gonna be honest, Stathis does not come across very well.
Yeah, this is horrible. Like, can you imagine someone doing this to you?
Yeah, he gets into it, dude. And what kills me, none of the other people in the store turn to look.
No one's doing anything about it. If I witness someone harassing somebody else just like in a clothing store, I'd be like, are you okay? But yeah, he's like on his knees. He like throws her jacket down on the counter, or well, the jacket. But yeah, it's awful.
I probably wouldn't do anything about it, but I would film it for Reddit.
Which is doing something. They'll be shamed somehow, probably. Or I don't know how it works. But yeah, there's a karma there.
Which subreddit would you post it to?
Probably Public Freakout. I think Public Freakout would definitely be the one to go.
That makes sense. That's logical.
Yeah. I also, you know what though? Like, he gives her a hard time. You know what? She still gets that jacket though, don't she?
Oh yeah, she does.
Of course.
Stuff it, Stathis. And also Jeff Goldblum's wearing it later. You know, I'm thinking about this clothing thing, and I'm getting on a little bit of that trademarked Dylan plot hole spackle, but like, she is bringing him out of his shell a little bit, and so maybe that's why he does start wearing different clothes. Like, she gets him a shirt that she thinks he might look good in, like a jacket, and he's kind of opening up a little bit more.
Exactly.
Yeah, good job, Sherlock. It's like you finally get the movie now. Great.
Hey, listen, I just want to thank Dylan for his constant support. Yeah, and also that approach that he made to me in a clothing store. Yelled at me about getting a jacket for you, Travis. He said you were this. And it's fine.
For me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get it because Dylan yelled at me. So sorry that happened. But anyway, moving right along, guys. We're back in the lab, and thank goodness for Typhoon 2. He survives a teleportation. It appears that all that obsessing over the flesh has helped Seth figure out the code in the computer, and now he can successfully teleport living creatures. Also, there's a great reveal here of how, like, the baboon comes running out, because you kind of know where this movie's going, and then you also saw this horrific thing, but then it comes out and it's just normal and it gives him a big hug. Kind of love that.
Yeah, that's like the best hug too. It looks so cuddly.
I still gotta judge using the baboon at all. I think you find a stray cat or like maybe just a handful of ladybugs, maybe, and then count them on the other side and be like, yeah, five. We had five. Start there. Don't just throw your second best and only remaining baboon in there.
Agreed.
But do you think it's harder to teleport five ladybugs or one baboon?
Why, how the f*** would I know that?
You're a scientist.
Would all five ladybugs be spliced into one ladybug?
Oh, God. Ah. That sounds so much more horrific than a fly.
It comes out, it's like a woman bug, and it's massive.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So we, yep. Anyway, moving along, they decide to drink some champagne. Well, she finds that Stathis has had something sent over to the warehouse, and it's a big front page spread for the periodical that he works for, featuring Seth Brundle's work. And she's like, oh, no, this is my story. And also, I kind of made a promise to my new beau that this wasn't going to get published. So she goes to shut Stathis down.
I wonder if you could get that cover of that magazine as a poster. That would be cool.
It's great. That's a great graphic design. I love that magazine cover.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's so 80s. So awesome.
It's amazing.
So what you're saying is you guys approve of Stathis's work. I like it. Great.
Terrific. I think he did great.
He did really good there.
This is the start of his arc. He's doing okay.
There is a reason he is a successful editor, okay? He's not just perving around all the time, taking showers in people's apartments where he's not welcome, okay? He is good at his job.
I mean, I don't think I think he probably gave that to a graphic designer. I don't think he crafted that.
He approved it and delivered it. I mean, does he get any credit there, Haley? Jeez. He's terrible, though, seriously, until the second half of the movie, and then he's much more supportive. He is going to run that out of spite. So Ronnie goes to sort of tell him off. She also, like, just soft asks Seth to take her on a vacation, which I thought was very nice and romantic. And I do like that their relationship is blooming there. I think that justifies a lot of what happens earlier. Back at Stathis' office, he's smoking in the office, first of all. Gross. All right. Don't like it. Second of all, I wrote in my notes here, Stathis is a smug turd.
Mm-hmm.
Accurate.
Yeah. Yep. That's pretty accurate.
Sums it up.
And it feels like here, too, he was much more using this as a tool to insert himself into her life and not be able to be ejected. Like, he was using it less as a, I'm going to print this story, and more of a, like, you got to keep me in the loop.
Yep.
So, and then he also gets pervy again, which is just unfortunate, Stathis. You need to grow up, son.
Old habits, hard to break.
But while, unfortunately, this also needs to happen for plot-wise, because Seth needs to be alone with some alcohol and a baboon that he talks to, and he finally figures out that Seth, Stathis, is Ronnie's ex. And he gets a little jealous here, guys.
Yeah, and when I get, you know, when I go down the hole and it's just me and a tankard of whiskey and my best baboon, it can get dark, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of spiral, and I think that's what we're seeing here. It's a relatable scene. I think we've all been here.
And I think we've got to just, as a safety warning for all the listeners out there, don't drink and teleport. Just don't. Don't do
that. That is the cautionary tale. Up the whole thing.
It is not safe.
Yeah.
Because there is a fly that is buzzing around the baboon as well as around the apartment. And he does, in fact, decide to drunkenly teleport himself. He looks at the baboon and he says, hey, you're fine. You're fine. This is going to be fine. I'm going to teleport myself. Again, a man who has built his life on caution. He was so cautious that he did not work with anyone else on this project, that he somehow funneled the money through many different cohorts so that nobody knew what he was working on. He gets drunk one time and says, nope, I'm on it. This is science.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I realize he's drunk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that he has successfully transported one baboon across his living room.
That's a big accomplishment, bigger than five ladybugs. I think we've all agreed.
Right, he shouldn't have tried it to begin with, but he did. It was a success. Mm-hmm. But I think, even at my drunkest, I'm running that baboon through the paces another four or five times before I get in there.
I would have never put that baboon in the telepod.
You wouldn't. I would have eventually. I'd have worked my way up to baboon.
Yeah, worked your way up.
I would have went right to human trials, just not on myself. You know, like, I mean, you're upfront with people. You're like, look, this is teleporter. If it doesn't work, you won't have to worry about it. If it does work, you get a cool $200.
You might get turned inside out.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be fine. Well, he goes to teleport himself. Also, guys, Naked Goldblum. And he's also, you know what? As angry and drunk and jealous as he was, he still sets the camera up to film for her. I thought that was pretty romantic of the Goldblum there. And also to film himself nakedly teleporting is also one of the biggest just flexes I've ever seen in a movie. I really appreciate that as well. So he does the teleport. I'm sure everybody can see this coming. The fly is in the teleporter with him when he teleports. Mm.
Do we know why he has to be naked? Because he can clearly transport socks.
Well, but maybe, well, see, maybe he knows that it's not in like sophisticated enough to transport multiple things. Mm. But, you know, he doesn't know about the fly being in there.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll buy that for now.
But he didn't want to complicate it with clothes and biological material. So he knows that it's a possibility that things wouldn't go so well together.
Mm. It would have been a funnier movie if he had transported himself in clothes and came out as just a talking hat.
Or he just slowly turned into a hat.
Would have been a funnier movie that way. Yeah.
The hat. We need the sequel.
You know, actually, what's funny about this is there's an improv game we play where the host or the person in the game is supposed to guess endowments of players. And inevitably, one of them is always like someone is slowly turning into a thing or slowly turning into something. Mm-hmm. And I always think about this movie whenever we play that game.
Mm.
And you like start... It's so wonderful. I love it. The movie, not improv. But improv is also okay. Another just little detail here. As much as I talked about how I wanted to hug that baboon, I do not want to hug that baboon naked, which he does here. And I just, even if it is my best baboon friend, I'm not trusting it naked. You just can't trust a baboon if you're naked.
Oh, you know... This is a great place for me to insert another little fun fact about the baboon that I learned. Mm-hmm. Shout out to a little documentary about this movie called Fear of the Flesh. Mm-hmm. So apparently the baboon, Typhoon, was mm-hmm. raised by a small blonde woman. And it just so happened that the script supervisor, I think, on the set of the film was a small blonde woman. And so he had like a thing for small blonde women, and he would, when she was on set, this baboon would get massive erections.
Real.
So yeah, you would not want to be hugging the baboon.
Yeah. Man. I wonder how high they can jump with an erection. That's like a different Google search, but I am curious.
I mean, I would assume slightly less.
Because he jumps right into Goldblum's arms when he steps out of that thing. And if he's coming at me full hog, I'm ducking. Baboon's flying out the window.
I mean, but who could jump in Jeff Goldblum's arms and not have a massive erection? That's my question.
Another fair point.
So, you know, I'll give Typhoon a little break there. Well, anyway, moving right along, guys. Ronnie returns and finds Goldblum is he's sleeping off his hangover.
Wait, hold on. Before this is my time to shine.
Oh, snap. I'm sorry, Travis.
She's going to make her way into the room. And what you don't notice is there's a hand that comes from the west and places itself on this door frame. Did you see it?
Run it back, Travis.
Run it back. Watch okay. The left All side right. of the door she walks through. Uh-huh. There's a hand that pops up. Did you see it?
Oh, I didn't see a hand. What are you talking about?
There's no hand, Travis.
Do it again.
I'll pause it on the hand. How about that? I'll pause it on the hand. 1, 2.
This is...
Boop. Right there. Okay. So look over to the left. You can see a little ring. You can see a hand against the door.
Haley, you're the expert on this film. Do you see a hand there, or is my friend Travis
on
having
the
a little
left.
Break
on
apart?
The left? Yeah. Okay. It's I see the reflection of the ring. I think that you're referring to.
Yeah, the glint off the ring. That's a whole hand right there. I can see it very clearly on my screen. Wow. That there's a hand there.
I want to be clear that I don't see it. This is sort of a Schrodinger's hand situation for me.
There is a hand on the door.
It doesn't see it to me. It does not look like a hand, but I see a shape that you were referring to.
It's so clearly a hand.
Travis, what is the timestamp of this?
Oh, I saw it. I saw it pop in there.
Oh, snap. Oh, we've got two hand confirmations.
37 minutes. You see the hand.
Okay.
There's a hand that pops up.
In the Discord, pop in and let us know if you see the hand at 37 minutes into the fly, or if Travis, I need to be worried about my friend. But he was more excited about seeing a hand in this film than he was anything. He was more excited
the best
about
part.
Anything
yeah,
I've ever
really
seen.
Were.
Yeah. After his first stand-up show, he was kind of like, yeah, okay, that was fine. And then this, he was like, Kevin, I saw a hand.
Canonically explain the hand. Tell me it doesn't make the movie crazier that there's someone else in the apartment that we never know about.
maybe it was the baboon. Is it baboon size?
Do baboons wear wedding rings on human hands?
If they're married and have a human hand.
Although I am curious where the baboon is when they are making lots of love.
Yeah,
that's a horny baboon.
It never comes back. And she walks by its empty cage, too.
I know. It's disturbing. I did wonder where the baboon just went. Yeah.
Let me get out my Dylan plot hole spackle here. There is a line of dialogue where they reference sending it off for tests to make sure it's okay after the teleportation. So let's just assume that that happens. That's in fact one of the reasons that they were going to go on the vacation is because they needed the tests to happen before he did human trials. Because you go right from baboon to human.
True.
That's a wacky conversation. Like, hey, baboon testing place. Yeah, it's me, Seth. Yeah, I got another one. I need you to check it out. Yeah, I shot it across the living room. It's walking. Yeah, it's right side in now, but I'm still curious.
It's much better than the one I sent you last night.
Yeah.
Oh, what is he doing to these baboons? he's a little sweepy because he got kind of wasted. And so she wakes him up. He tells her that he teleported, guys. While for some reason that just carried over for me saying he's sweepy. But he tells her that he got drunk and teleported, and also that he is jealous of her old boyfriend. And she's like, oh, you being silly. And then they kissy-kiss. And she notices some weirdness on his back. Or she brushes her fingers over that wound in his back from that computer piece earlier. And there's these very coarse little hairs sticking out of his back. But she doesn't think anything of it. You know, they about to be horny.
Well, she does comment on it. She's like, you got these weird hairs back here.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, thank you.
And he's like, I'm getting old. He's like, yeah, that's what happens when you get old.
I like that as an excuse. Like, who knows what could happen?
In fact, he's excited about it. He's like, I've been waiting for this. Like, I have not had enough body hair. I'm so excited to get more body hair.
Yeah, he's very enthusiastic.
While they're sleeping, Goldblum hears a fly in the apartment and grabs it, eyes closed, super fast reflexes, which is weird. He's like a little bit of a ninja there, and it kind of wakes him up. And
we had a kid in Sunday school that would do that all the time. He would just but he would put them in his mouth, which was not okay. Good. That guy's in prison now who knows what. But his name was Leonard.
Yeah, that sounds.
I can tell you more. I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware. I'm telling a true story.
Is that who you named your? Is that who you named your cat after?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
No, of course it wasn't. I named the cat. God.
There's only two Leonards I know of in your life, the guy that eats flies and your cat, all right? Cut me a break.
And my cat won't even eat flies. That's the worst part about it.
Wait, are they the same person? Did he go through a telepod?
Oh my God, what if?
Oh, he didn't, though. He committed a homicide. Leonard, your cat. Anyway, the point is, Goldblum gets out of bed, and sometime later, Ronnie wakes up, and she finds Seth standing kind of creepy in the living room, and then he somehow starts doing chair gymnastics that presumably she has not seen him do before, although if you told me that was Jeff Goldblum's regular morning routine, I'd say, that makes some sense. So he does that, and then he does some pole stuff. Which would be more additional gymnastics. And I have a question about this. Do flies do gymnastic routines?
I'm curious. Why'd you call it pole stuff? That could be 100 different.
Oh, yeah. To be clear, he's not dancing saucily on a pole. He is swinging on a pole, which also looks like a water line in his house. And I think
I'd call that a bar.
Oh, is that
a pole?
Oh, bar.
That's a bar.
Instead of pole.
Yeah, I call that a bar.
Is it a bar because it's horizontal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
like
so.
A pull-up bar.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't call it a pull-up pole, do you?
I do. I'm like, God, I can't wait to get my hands on a pull-up pole. But so we get some swinging around, and she's super impressed. She's like, dang, man, he is even sexier than whence we had sex just earlier in this evening. And so a little bit later, in fact, the next day, he wakes up. He's feeling fantastic. So they're out on the street. Just kind of strolling around, doing what young lovers do, stopping by a street vendor and getting a pretty little locket, a little kissy kiss. They are dressed, mwah. Like, I can't even tell you how amazing 80s their outfits are in this scene.
Great outfits. I actually love the clothes in this movie. I would wear Gina Davis's wardrobe for this movie for the rest of my life.
You and I are in complete agreement. I also would wear Gina Davis's wardrobe for this movie for the rest of my life. The beret? Come on. How often do you get to wear a beret in life anymore? It's so disappointing.
A pink beret, no less. Isn't it pink?
I mean, I'm a fan of a raspberry beret, but, you know, pink's okay, too. A shout out to Prince.
I got it. Yeah, he listens. It's great. Good job,
Ken. He loves the show. He told me in my mind.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes.
But speaking of sweet scenes, a lot of sugar in that coffee.
Oh, yeah. They're in a cafe, and he is starting to, and this is where we start to see a little bit of that transformation. And say what you will, Goldblum's transformation in The Fly and how he adopts mannerisms is really good. Like,
it's amazing.
It is an absolute stellar performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why you let off with say what you will.
Yeah.
We've been saying good things. You're the one that says what you will.
He's fantastic. I mean, I was just prefacing that, Travis, because of all your huge and obvious criticisms that I've listened to about this film.
The little head tweaks, though, you're right, like the little jitters that he occasionally does. Oh, it's so good.
And the elevated speech patterns.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, if someone told me to, like, be a fly, like, what kind of mannerisms would I don't know what I would do, but I feel like he just got it. He just nailed it. I wonder how long Jeff Goldblum did he method act this? Was he staring at flies for a while? I don't know.
It took him like 15 minutes. He was Goldblum, so he was a little bit ahead of the curve. You know what I mean?
Okay. Right.
Well, I know that he was like really intense about this role. And John Getz, Stathis, they actually carpooled together to set every day. And Jeff would be like doing vocal warm-ups in the car. And John Getz was like, yeah. And I mean, I knew he had to sit for like 3 hours in makeup, so I thought it was a little much. But so, I mean, Jeff Goldblum was like serious about this.
Oh, man. That actually, I don't know if I'll leave this in. So if I do, congratulations. You guys get to hear this totally random story. But I did a play like 15 years ago. And Blair, who was also in Big Lit Conspiracy for a while, was in this play with me. And there was this guy that was in this play with us, and he was high level creepy. He was definitely living in an abandoned warehouse, and he kept trying to get all of us to come out to his car and rehearse scenes with him. And it just to this day, I just wonder like what the trajectory of my life would have been if I'd went out to that car and ran a scene with him. And keep in mind, he had four lines in the show, so it's like, I don't know what scenes he wanted to run. Anyway, it was upsetting, and now you guys have to...
Was it any of the kissing scenes?
Yeah, I mean, no, we did those in the theater. That was fine.
Oh, okay.
But
weird.
Just
I wonder what he wanted.
Always wanted to rehearse in his car.
Interesting.
So I guess Jeff Goldblum got to express his love of rehearsing in a car, and this poor gentleman never did. Well, guys, huge hilarious stories aside... Back at the apartment / warehouse / lab / baboon kill chamber, they're doing what you do after a nice day on the town. They're making some sexy time. They're getting to the business. And Gina Davis is like, all right, I'm tapping out, man. It's been like 4 hours. You need to settle down, Jeff Goldblum. And his stamina is right up there with Patrick Swayze's refractory period.
It's something to behold, man.
Mm-hmm. So also, are flies, are they notoriously long-lasting lovers? I'm not sure.
I think they multiply fast. Maybe that's what they're getting at.
I saw that covered in a David Attenborough documentary, so I just wasn't sure how that worked in nature. But I'm just going to assume that that is a product of him turning into a fly as well. Or maybe that's just Goldblum. You know, maybe that's just straight Seth Brundle. Yeah,
he's just feeling it. The baboon gave him some tips.
That's right. Well, straight up shout out to Ronnie as a girlfriend. They make love for hours. Then he's eating ice cream at the table in his underwear, and she's like, let me trim up your back hair for you. That is a ride or die if I've ever seen one.
For sure. Right.
Like, yeah, and your back hair that is rebar. Like, it clinks when you cut it.
Like, you, that's true love. You, barely get the scissors to penetrate.
Well,
she had to go get her scissors that can cut through pennies. She's like, I'll be right back. I got to get the good pair.
I got to get the good ones. Because you always got the good one. And don't use the cloth scissors. Anyway, he all of a sudden gets a wild hair. Huh? Pun does. Yeah, I know. And he wants her to teleport. And she's like, whoa, slow down in your tidy whities. And this incenses Seth. Mm-hmm. He is so angry that she doesn't want to teleport.
Yeah, this is like, all of his dialogue here is basically my favorite of the whole movie. So good.
And this one is one where, like, say what Travis will about, like, the quick character motivation changes that seem nonsensical. And this one, it actually makes sense because he is now living at the speed of a fly, right? So their life is much faster, shorter, so on and so forth. So he's like, you don't want to do it? Fine. I don't need you anyway. I got this flesh thing figured out. I'm going to get me a young lady that will go through my teleporter. And he just rolls out. Like, he has a whole relationship arc with her in about 4 minutes. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, it's because he thinks he's feeling good. Some of it could be the pound of sugar he just had. But, like, he's amped up. And he's like, this thing has made me, like, a better human. I'm, like, superhuman. He's like, you got to come through with me. And we'll be, like, superhuman together. Mm-hmm. We'll be like Bonnie and Clyde, but we'll be able to do gymnastics better and not get shot at as much and stuff.
Yeah, that is how you get after you've had a lot of sugar, Travis.
Right?
Yeah, 100%. Well, he heads out to the bar and he buys himself a scotch. And there's a young lady there in the bar. He presumably is interested in getting her back to take a look at his telepod. And so to impress her, he bets a couple of ruffians in this bar that he can out-arm wrestle them. And also, this is where you start to see some of those makeup effects. He's not looking great. He's looking a little haggard. Got some
blotchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He doesn't have that vigor that he had when he was doing those chair gymnastics, right? And so he decides to engage in this arm wrestling contest with this gentleman, bets him a hundo, says, I bet I can beat you, and boy, does he beat this guy or what?
Yeah, and if he wins, he gets to take the girl home, which she had no say in it. Didn't seem fair.
Yeah, I didn't approve of that, but, you know, again, plot gonna do what plot gonna do.
Yeah, but after Fly Goldblum breaks this dude's wrist and you visibly see the bone come out, she's pretty excited she's like,
yeah,
I want to go hang out with the dude that just breaks bones. That seems great. Take me to your serial killer warehouse.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you? Just like, of course.
Yeah.
So he snaps this dude's arm. He leaves with the lady. Now, to her credit, she's like, I'm... And also, he's got goo that comes out of his hands during this, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird. Not a big fan of goo hand, but apparently this lady is. And she's like, you know what? Before we head back to your murder lab, warehouse, monkey kill chamber, could we hit some more bars? And he's like, yeah, sure, why not? A little irritated, but he acquiesces. And they hit a few more bars and then end up back at the... warehouse where Tawny, this is the young lady's name, starts to pick up a few red flags when she has to walk up. Well, what's funny is, like, the warehouse looks to be maybe 3 stories, but for some reason they go up like 15 stories of stairs. Like, I'm not sure what's going on there. Maybe they got lost, or maybe it's like an Escher sort of painting inside of the warehouse. I'm not sure which. But either way, Tawny is getting some red flags, but she says, you know what? I've already committed to this. Like, I don't, what am I going to go back home and take care of my children? Forget that. I'm going to spend this evening with Seth Brundle. So they check out the telepod. He teleports himself again to show her kind of how it works and impress her. And then he comes out and they do a little bit of, well, the business.
Would you be impressed, anybody here with me, you two, if someone invited you back to their place and they're like, let me show you a trick. And they take off all their clothes and they jump in, I think, on one end of their room. And then smoke comes out and they pop out on the other end. Are you like, oh, take me away? Or are you like, what the fuck was that? Are there two of you?
I can say.
Is there a secret tunnel?
I would be intrigued. I'd be like, wow, how'd you do that? I don't know that that would be like, you know, let's have sex now. But I'd be like, that was very interesting. Talk to me more about this.
Yeah, I'm with Haley on this one. I would stick around long enough to ask a few questions. Like, did you have to be naked?
Question number one.
That would have actually, as they started taking their clothes off, I would say, why are you taking your clothes off? And then when they get in the pod, I'd go, hey, what does that pod do? And if they were like, shh, hold on a second, I'd be like, all right, okay, I'm patient.
Yeah, and question number two would be like, I don't mean to impose, but I've been looking around, and I got to ask, does a baboon live here?
and what is that pile of viscera in the corner? Is that...
Was that a baboon?
Was that a baboon? This is weird. Anyway, and why... Why do you have that pull-up pole? further, so she gives him a little rub down. If we get back, sorry, I know I took us way afield there, guys. But actually, Travis, I think that was your fault. I'm blaming you. So she tries to give him a little rub down after their lovemaking session, and he's like, ow, that really hurts. And then Ronnie appears. I don't know where she was when Tawny was coming in and they were getting the bang bang in, but she says, like, I think this is my favorite line in the movie. She says, be afraid, be very afraid, because he's trying to get her to go in the telepod, and I just love that. Like, that's that great. Is do if I were Tawny and I just had a little tete-a-tete with Jeff Goldblum slash Seth Brundle, and then I came out and there was a lady standing there fabulously dressed, and she was like, be afraid, be very afraid, I would leave in my underwear too.
Yeah,
I think that's fair, Kev. Yeah, you have a story like that, don't you?
Oh yeah. Oh my god, speaking of Crab Rangoon, wait till I tell you that one. But maybe that'll be for another time. Well, Ronnie says, hey Seth, you look bad and you smell bad, two things I'm not really into. And I also took the hairs from your back to a lab overnight, one of those overnight fly hair testing labs, and it turns out that they're not human. Now, I know what you're thinking, Travis. You're like, there's no way she could get those hairs tested overnight, but I'm little Dylan plot hole spackle here. He's getting more references in this than you are, man. But she does work for a science magazine. Maybe she knows scientists that can do hair tests.
That's a very good point.
That still doesn't explain how they can do it overnight. And they what do they do? How do they get in that so fast?
I mean, I feel like if you look at a lot of hair, I'm no scientist. Okay, Travis, you are. So you correct me if I'm wrong. But I feel like if you look at a lot of hair, particularly, you could probably look at it under a microscope and be like, yeah, that's human hair.
Microscope?
Yeah, microscope. Yeah. It's what you look at when you're sweepy. And you can say, if it's hair, human hair at least. I mean, like, I feel like that's probably, you know.
My thing was, like, when she cut it and it came off as, like, metal shavings, she didn't have to take it anywhere. She was like, this is not human hair. She could have just made up the story and been like, okay, I talked to a guy, and he also says, that's all you should have to do.
Are you calling Ronnie a liar?
Sure, but it worked out.
Okay. All right. I'll take that into account. Well, meanwhile, she says, Seth, I think you're a little bit sick. And he goes, oh, yeah, could a sick person do this? And then he just, like, punches his wall all like Kyle on Six Mountain Dews style.
And that was a load-bearing wall.
It does was. Chip apart. Like, he throws some serious heat at this wall.
Anger issues. I mean, come on. That's a bad sign. We that's don't want that.
That's a bad sign. Yeah. I don't approve of it. I don't approve of it. Well, fast forward a bit later, he heads into the bathroom. He's a little, he also kicks her out and says, don't ever talk to me again. I'm done with you. And don't talk about my wiry back hair anymore, Ronnie. And also, I'm not sending you a Christmas card. So he heads into the, he doesn't say any of those things. He just kicks her out. So anyway, he heads into the bathroom and he looks into the mirror and he's like, dang, I don't look good. And then he just, there's no way to say this. He just pulls off his fingernails. He just, he tries to do a little shaving. And then he says, nah, that's not working. And then he says, well, that didn't work. I know what I'll do. I'll pull my fingernails off.
Yeah.
I like that you're saying that's his thought process,
which I
adore. I love that. I love that he was like, I'm going to shave a little bit. You know what? Fuck shaving. Let's get rid of these fingernails. I don't think it was quite like that, but I like that.
Yeah, and he like squeezes one and it like spritzes onto the mirror. But like, this is the grossest scene for me. Like,
oh, yeah.
By far.
Really?
It's not, you know. There's a lot of other...
seven others that we haven't gotten
to
yet.
No, this is the grossest. This is the grossest one. I think of the others as art. This one's just gross.
Haley, I didn't think this was gross until you used the verb spritzes. And
it's
then...
a spritz.
It's not a gush. It's a spritz.
Very much so.
It's...
Oh, man.
It Jesus. Is gross.
Well, after that, he says, am I dying? Pretty natural correlation there. Can't shave. Your fingernails are falling off. Yeah, you're probably going to die. So then he decides, you know what? Maybe there is something to what everybody's telling me. So he investigates the teleportation on the PC. Science stuff happens, and he figures out that there was a fly in there. Again, guys, word of caution. Don't get drunk and teleport. It's just not safe.
Right.
And this is the only fault of, I think for the most part, the movie's directed very well. This stupid made-for-TV stinger that cuts between the scene where he finds out he's a fly to the scene where he calls her in her apartment is just so made-for-TV movie. It's just, it's not great. But that was just my pet peeve.
What are you talking about? What are you mad about now?
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
Like, right? Well, first of all, the condition of the world. I think we need to do more to protect
with the movie.
Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. Fine. No, there's this like little stinger at the end of this scene where he finds out that he's the fly, and it's sort of like formulating on the computer, and it does this like little fade away, like it's cutting out of a made for TV movie to the commercial break, but then it just picks up in the next scene. It's just really weird. How that transitions. It's just very different than the way the rest of the movie is directed. Maybe it's just letting us sit with that knowledge for a while, you know, which is an interesting convention. But
that was worth bringing up, Kev.
That was I was just going to gloss over it in a mildly irritated way, and you made it into a thing, ChatGPT.
I wanted to know what the issue was. Now that I've seen it, I'm like, oh, okay, just...
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. I noticed the movie we're supposed to be talking about, Travis.
Sure. Okay. It's fine. It's fine. You have a good eye.
Anyway, yeah, good eye. Thank you. That's all you
Sharp.
Could have just said that.
Sharp.
You could have said
great
that.
Eye.
Jesus. I'm going to go spritz with my fingernails. So we get a little call made to Ronnie, and it is Seth, and he sounds garbled. He doesn't sound great. We find out it's been about 4 weeks. She tried to get in touch with him. She was worried. He wouldn't return her call, and he says, it's gotten worse. That doesn't sound good. So she does what you would do, which is go for a visit, and man, back at his place, he is looking rough, guys.
Yeah, this is how I imagine Lane Staley looked in the latter days. Just rough, just strung out, like not looking great. It's like, you should, and if you haven't yet, you definitely should see a doctor. We've got them. You probably know some. You're a scientist. Maybe we don't just live like this. You don't have to hide it. Get a specialist. They got fly guy specialists, I'm sure.
Do they?
They probably do.
I'm still reeling from the Lane Staley insult, first of all. All right.
What was it, an insult?
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm so angry. I'm going to turn you into the man in a box.
Okay.
The box.
Well, now I'm angry. But he doesn't look good.
I can see it. It's in them bones.
Great makeup, though. Looking good here.
So good. Shout out to Chris Wallace, or Wallace. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce it, but in charge of the makeup and special effects.
Hell yeah, Chris. Get it. That's good.
Still thinking of Alice in Chains songs.
I knew you would be.
I'm just stuck there, guys. I can't get away from it. It hurts. Yes, the makeup effects are just by and large very, very good. You can see why Jeff Goldblum was sitting in the seat for hours getting them applied. Well, plot-wise, he does tell her about the fly and that he thinks it has somehow given him a form of cancer. And she asks, hey, maybe we can cure you. We can fix whatever this is. It's not that bad. Then he throws up on a donut and his ear falls off.
The ear falling off, such a good touch. So it just comes right off, dude.
Yeah, it's great. I have a question about the throw up on like the digesting of fly that reference. So he throws up now into his own hands. His hands don't melt, but later when he throws his acid throw up on someone's hands, they melt.
Isn't he wearing gloves right there? I think he might be wearing gloves.
Oh, wait, yeah. He is wearing gloves. I think you're right.
Yeah.
So the acid will melt through hands and bones, but not gloves.
No, I think this is a very good point, Kevin. An actual flies, does their acid affect their own bodies? Or do they have some sort of are they impervious to it somehow?
Travis and I had this debate, and I don't know, but I do have. I spent an unnecessary amount of time thinking about this, guys, and much like that cutaway stinger earlier in the film. But is it possible that because he's not fully turned into the Brundle fly at this point, that his acid that he throws up is not quite as potent as it is later in the film?
That's a very good theory.
So possibly that's it, but I don't know if flies are immune to their own acid. I do feel like Travis will chime in as a scientist and tell us whether they are or not.
Well, they do. They don't have teeth. They have a proboscis. They throw up on their food, and they actually use a straw to suck it up. But their stuff, it wouldn't go through meat that fast. Maybe bread or something inorganic or, you know. But I kind of agree. I don't think it would be that fast acting.
Yeah. It's not tenactin.
That's right, Kev. Good reference. Yeah, I think it's a movie. So,
I mean, that's probably the bigger point. But we are here to quibble on details, Travis.
No, it gets stronger. It gets stronger later in the movie. That's
yeah,
exactly
I think
what
that makes
is.
The most sense. Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. So, Stathis back at the office. He says, "Listen." She goes to him for advice. He gives her pretty solid advice here. He says, "Yeah, don't go back. You said it could be contagious and you could die. Maybe get him medical help." And then he just turns back into slightly smarmy. He's like, "Oh, okay. So you're going to go back. I hope you let me claim your body, presumably when you're dead." Okay.
Great pickup line, though, right?
Is it though? Hey, is it
like if you're like, "Hey, can I claim your body when you're dead?" And stuff.
Yeah,
horrible.
It's
for later. Like you don't have to deal with me while you're alive, but maybe after.
Maybe after. Stathis decides that he also wants to see the Brundle fly. And then he's like, "If I can see it, I'm sure I'll come up with something." But you are. You're an editor of a magazine, not a scientist.
Right. What's he going to do?
To be honest, if someone told me that they knew somebody who was slowly turning into a fly, I'd want to see it too. Like, I'd just come up with a reason and be like, "Hey, yeah, that sounds amazing."
I might be like, "Send me a pic." I'm not going to be like, "Hey, get me up there with him."
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the same as being there. It's like, I could send you a picture of Niagara Falls, but you got to experience them, you know?
That's a fair point.
And you got to experience the Brundle fly, which we're about to.
Yeah.
So back at the lab, Seth is climbing on the ceiling. He is just full on fly climbing on the ceiling. And he says, hey, I think I've figured this thing out. The disease isn't killing me. The disease wants to turn me into something.
It's doing a good job.
It's doing a great, great job. And this is where we get the first little drop of the Brundle fly, which kind of becomes a tagline of this movie. He also is recording stuff. And I think this scene now, the film was produced by Mel Brooks. So let that take your mind where it will go. But I think this is one of the most hilarious lines in the movie. And I think it is played a little bit for laughs or just in opposition of like seriousness, but he's like, this will make a great children's book, The Brundle Fly. And then he demonstrates vomiting on food and showing the camera how he eats it. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's like consciously trying his best to make some sort of light of this like horrible situation. I take this movie very seriously, guys. I don't know if you can tell.
I clearly I do too. I mean, I take it very seriously. Travis is just, I'm so sorry about that, Hayden. He just acts like this and I can't stop him. He's incorrigible, but by God, he's cute as hell. Now,
I think he just likes donuts.
That's yeah, dude, definitely. So let me ask you this. If you could get a I know, Haley, you probably would already, but if there was a children's book based off of the Brundle Fly and like his life and how he lives, would you buy that children's book?
Yes.
Done. Excellent. I would too.
Folks at home, no, we did not edit that in lightning fast. That was how that happened.
Amazing. Well, Stathis, we cut to him in the office and he is watching the video of the Brundle Fly eating. And I'm sorry, it's not. It's actually at Ronnie's place. She, again, he's creeping at her place. And she comes in crying and tells Stathis that she is pregnant with Seth's baby. She decides to have this conversation in the bathroom, or rather she goes to the bathroom to get some privacy. And Stathis follows her in there where she has a lounge chair. She has a lounge chair in her bathroom.
Explain that, Haley.
I gotta watch that. I don't recall the lounge chair.
I mean, it's not. It's a chair, and she is lounging in it, but also upset.
Oh yeah, you're right. There's just a chair. Like, why would a chair be there? Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Okay.
You know how Kevin is with chairs, but
well, you know what? You know what I thought about this scene. Like the thing that occurred to me in this scene is that, like, how sad is it that she has no one else to talk to about any of this or confide in or seek support from but this horrible, manipulative, creepy stalker ex-boyfriend of hers? That's awful.
Yeah, it's a good point. They should have cast more people so she'd have a better support system.
You know, this really is like a three-person movie. Like, there's Tawny and the guy that gets his arm broken. But other than that, it really is a very, like, tight little cast. You know, Haley, I did not consider that maybe she just, like, does not have anybody else to kind of lean on. That's rough. Wow.
It is sad.
It doesn't seem like she does have anybody else.
Not in this moment, no.
Yeah, at least
this
not.
A pretty low moment.
In the big city. But then also, how do you call your mama and go like, Mom, I got pregnant by this man who's slowly turning into a fly?
Yeah. How would you do that?
Like, she's going to put you in an institution. So like, I probably would just stick with the person that already knew about the whole sitch. You got to do less explaining. So I do like that. Well, in the next scene, she has been rolling. She's getting rolled into the hospital because she is kind of losing it. And we see she is now in labor, presumably with Seth's baby. And this is the part that traumatized me as a child and as less so as an adult, but still somewhat. She gives birth to a larva.
What scared me the most about it was that she found out she was pregnant and then in the next scene is having the baby. I was like, how fast? Our babies.
Spoiler, Travis, it's a dream sequence. So just we'll get that out of the way.
Well, thanks for that. That doesn't help. Still.
It is really so shocking. Fast. When that maggot comes out, it's just like, and it's wriggling.
Oh, so that wriggling. Mm-hmm. It even spritzes a little bit, I think.
Does it?
No.
It does a little spritz, yeah. You know, fun fact, you know who's delivering the baby in that scene?
Cronenberg.
Of course, Haley would know that.
I knew it, too. I said it.
Shut up, Kevin.
Haley said it.
But yeah,
with more,
good job, Haley.
It is so gross. It is a gross, wiggling little... But anyway, she wakes up from her nightmare, and she's like, man, that's messed up. Well, I'm just... What are you going to do? It's like 2 a.m. I can't...
A lot of times in movies, dream sequences, when they come out of them, I'm always like, oh, dang it. Really? You got me with that. But this one, I was so happy it was a dream. I was like, oh, yeah. thank God.
Well, spoiler alert for The Fly, too. She does have the baby. So just FYI. Back at the lab in the next scene, the PC no longer recognizes Seth's voice. Mostly because he forgot the I think, but also because he's getting more and more fly-like. And that just assume that when we cut back to the Brundle fly, he is becoming more fly-like because it happens. It happens quick. Also, yo, his teeth start falling out.
Yeah, those teeth are gone. They're little nubs.
Yeah.
Which is weirder scene. Like, comparing this directly to fingernails, I feel like the teeth bothered me more. Maybe I have more of a tooth thing.
So my question in this, sorry, yeah. Travis, were you done with your talking about your tooth thing, or did you want to make fun of Lane Staley's death a little bit more?
He died without a lot of teeth.
That might be true, actually. I love Lane Staley so much. I'm so,
well, you brought him back up.
I'm saying a little word to the universe in peace and honor of my hero, Lane Staley. Now, moving forward, Ronnie stops by the apartment. Slash warehouse slash Brundle fly nest. And my question is this, because she never really gets the words out. Is she saying goodbye, or is she telling him she's going to have an abortion? Like, or both? Like, what is the thing that goes unsaid between the two of them here?
I feel like it's a lot of things. I feel like, yeah, she's there to tell him that she's pregnant and... to just like try to see if there's maybe anything left of him there. Like, she's like trying one last time to reach him and connect with him. And clearly, the insect is awake.
Yes, and he makes that comment himself. I do, Haley, what do you think about the insect politics monologue?
Incredible.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh my God, I love this. I love this scene because it's like, I feel like it's like really in keeping with his character so far and the way this guy speaks and the way he thinks, and it's him like trying to tell her that he's no longer there and that he feels like he could actually be dangerous. And I love the insect politics. He's like again, like trying to kind of be funny.
Mm-hmm. He also, the like Brundlefly Natural History Museum too, when he's putting his teeth in a jar in there. There's all kinds of gross stuff in there.
Oh, that is fun. I like that.
Yeah, he's like trying to like make light of it, even though he's obviously this horrible monster.
Yeah. Well, that scene, I do like that quite a bit. And Ronnie leaves, and she has made up her mind to not continue the pregnancy. She goes, Stathis is, by the way, just waiting outside for her. And he's like, yo, get in the car. And she's like, I need to get this taken care of tonight. And he's like, well, I don't know if I can schedule one that fast, but I'll see what I can do. And Seth,
he's like, "What do I look like, Patrick Swayze? I can't just get these things."
What am I, Jerry Orbach?
What am I, Jerry Orbach? Yeah. Jesus!
If only Jerry Orbach was in this, he would have saved the day. But Seth overhears this conversation, and he's like, "Oh dang, she never told me that she was pregnant. I don't want that to happen." And so at the doctor's office, Stathis is able to schedule it fairly quickly. The doctor's a little sleepy-eyed, but Ronnie says, look, I don't want to... They kind of dance around telling him that the father of the child is slowly turning into a fly monster. just... probably not information he needs.
Beating around the bush is like, that's the best time. That's the only time you got it. That is the key moment.
That's the time
we're beating all the way around the bush. I feel like I wanted to see them huddled up being like, all right, this is what we're going to say. But they go in there, they just wing it. They just free ball. I would have had a script.
Yeah, do they have a Hallmark card for this sitch?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe that's an opportunity. She doesn't want any tests. The doctor says, well, we could do tests to see if there's going to be anything wrong with the baby. She's like, no, I don't want to do that. I just want this done. So he takes her into an exam room to change her garb. And the Brundlefly seizes his opportunity and leaps through a glass window. And she's like, yo, what are you doing? No, no. And he's like, yeah, no, it's cool. Come with me. And so he sort of picks her up and she doesn't really fight him, but like you can kind of tell, maybe I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, but maybe they gave her some medicine or drugs to help her kind of calm down maybe, and she's not quite as lucid as she normally would be, or this is the man that she's loves slowly turning into a fly, like, and he just burst through a window and startled her. Like, how do you react to that?
Or they told her not to kick and scream too much because his makeup might fall off and that would be bad.
That so also like, would
just
be.
Just play it cool. Yeah,
that would be. That
play
would
it be. Cool.
Well, up on the roof, Seth begs her not to to have the abortion, and she refuses, and he mutters to himself, though loud enough for us as the audience, as well as Ronnie to hear, too bad. And we get a little cutaway, and it's back in the lab, and Stathis is like, well, why call the police? I've got an antique shotgun that I can wait until I get inside the lab to assemble rather than having it ready for the fly monster that could attack me at any time.
That was infuriating. What are you doing?
Such a Stathis move.
So big Stathis energy, am I right, guys? So he heads in, he puts the gun together. The Brundlefly is just like hanging out, like, yeah, I'll let him get the gun together. That's fine. I've got the advantage here. Well, Stathis discovers that the Brundlefly's plan is to take Ronnie, the baby who is in utero, and himself, and merge them all together into a blob fly family thing. What do we think about that?
A pretty gross omelet of humanity and fly, but I'd like to see it.
Yeah, deeply upsetting. I would also like to see it, and what a sight it would be.
Well, so all right,
and look. I kind of want to smell it. I want to be up front. I want to be honest. I want to know what it smells like.
Do you think it has that like sickening sweet sort of smell of like, you know, like vomit, but somebody ate taffy?
Wow. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
That's uncanny.
Like someone poured Parmesan cheese on taffy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. God. You know, we're back, Travis. I think we've got our groove back. This is season two. Haley, we just needed Haley to come help us. And by God, thank you, Haley.
Haley, what do you think it smells like?
Yeah, what do you think it smells like?
You know, the mozzarella on taffy, I didn't know.
Just different
before
cheese.
But that is completely correct. So
any cheese on taffy is what we've landed on.
That's yeah. Not probably not Lineburger. I think that's a little too strong.
Think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on what you eat. Anyway, look, guys, that if you are still listening to this, first of all, I'm sorry. And then second of all, Stathis has decided, okay, I've got to figure out where everybody is. I got to figure out how to stop this from happening. And boom, the Brundlefly drops from presumably the ceiling, possibly the open windows, a.k.a. like, you know, sort of Batcave style, Batman style, drops down on Stathis. They have a little bit of grappling, but I'm going to be honest, Stathis ain't got nothing for him because the Brundlefly, we've alluded to it, he pukes on Stathis's hand and his hand just straight up melts.
That's no good.
What is the Brundlefly feeling at this point? Like, what does his face say to you guys when he vomits up this stuff that melts dude's hand?
He's pleased with himself. He looks smug.
He does. Like, he looks like, yeah. And then he sort of, like, shakes his head like, you shouldn't have done it. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going in for round two. He vomits on his ankle and melts this dude's foot off.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's oh man, like his like the facial expression with the makeup while the vomit is coming out. Yo, guys, that ain't no spritzing.
It's so good.
It's amazing.
It's so good. And the fact that that guy just didn't even kick his leg while he was getting it vomited on. He was kind of like, what's this all about? Are you about to make out? Oh, it's more vomit.
I mean,
oh, it's, okay.
He was a little pro wrestler here where he's selling it a little bit. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, I can't possibly move or reach that gun, you know. But like you said, I mean, that makeup is a sensitive prosthetic, okay? We can't have it flying off in the middle of a scene and upsetting the balance.
Absolutely. But it's kind of a nice scene because we've had some pent-up anger towards Stathis, and he got some come up. He didn't die here, but he suffered because he's got one hand and one leg, and they're not on the same side. So... hopscotch is going to be wild.
I mean, look, he's not been a nice person, but I don't know that he's done anything to deserve being stumped twice. Like, I just don't know that it's in proportion.
He's the ex-boyfriend.
His best groping hand is now done. So we've taken that away from him. And he can no longer follow women into the bathroom without crutches or a wheelchair. So.
That's true. That is true.
They will see him coming.
He'll be much easier to run away from.
I mean, sure, serious creepy ex-boyfriend energy, but when she didn't have anybody else, who was there for?
He just was there. I don't know if that's the same thing, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, he's driving her to doctor's appointments, scheduling midnight doctor's appointments and getting his antique gun. That belonged to his father.
That was, you know, the midnight doctor was, that was clutch. I give him that.
That's an awesome Motley Crue song, too.
Midnight Doctor?
Yeah.
Nice.
So he is, at this point, incapacitated, and the Brundlefly is going in for the coup de grace. Presumably, he was just going to barf on his head and melt his head, which I was there for, guys. I don't know if you were there for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Please, bring it. Yeah.
For sure. Well, Ronnie calls out to him and says, hey, please don't do that. And he's like, all right, fine, whatever. And so then he hops up, grabs her from the ceiling where she is, or excuse me, on the roof where there's the window access, and leaps back into the lab. Now, she still doesn't know the plan, and he finally says, I'm going to put you in the pod and merge us all together, to which she promptly rips his jaw off his face.
She does. It's more like she's like pushing him away and the jaw just like comes off, which she isn't happy about.
Yeah, she's like, oh no, this was not my plan. I was hoping you'd get to keep this part.
Well, in typical theme of this film, it does get worse. So once the jaw is off, man, everything starts splitting apart. The transformation is going hardcore at this point. I guess his body that was turning into the fly is like, you know what, just it's got to happen.
Let's just do it. We lost the jaw. We got to go. Code red.
Yeah, we've been putting this off. Yeah, we... Code red, exactly. So all these fly human parts just start ripping out of his skin, and yet he's still pulling her towards the pod, and it is gloriously gory and gross.
It is amazing. This part, like, my jaw drops every time. This head splitting open, the eyeballs, like, pop and ooze.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so well done. Masterpiece. Like, this is just like incredible sculpture. I mean, it blows my mind. It's amazing.
Haley, I feel like every time you watch this movie, you watch this scene at least three times.
I don't, because I'm too invested. Like, I'm too like hooked into what's happening to like pause and go back. Like, I'm just like fully immersed.
That scene is exactly how every burrito falls apart that I make. I cannot wrap a burrito. One bite, and that's the back end of it. It's
if
just
you stop putting giant man fly parts in it, that would probably help.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that is kind of what refried beans look like, though. I mean, you know, same skin tone color anyway. So, well, anyway, he eventually overpowers her and chucks her in the pod, and he's cranking that sucker up. It's closed, and he is sort of... maneuvering himself to the computer to get it started up. Brundlefly is still, he's a tech whiz, right? He gets in the pod for himself, And Stathis, despite being completely incapacitated, he can't walk, he can't crawl, somehow manages to stump shoot the cords connecting. I would not have thought of this. I got to say, like, I would have just panicked and probably just, like, shot myself. But, like, he somehow has the, like...
Shoot your other foot? Like,
yes, I shoot my other foot, I wake up, and there's an even bigger fly ball up there. That's what would have happened to me. But he's somehow smart enough to shoot the cords attached to Ronnie pod to save perfect her aim. Perfect aim this angers the fly, and he's like smashing his way out of the pod, and then he gets like sort of halfway out and the telepod activates and sends him to the third pod. Guys, what
comes out? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. And also, what do you think about the predecessing, like, series of events? Like, that's some, like, what kind of therapist is Ronnie going to need after this is over?
Like a good one?
Yeah. Yeah. Some intensive work to be done there.
Yeah. It's like, first, how do you fold a burrito?
Yeah, that's the more pressing issue. Like Travis's burrito as well.
I just feel like that's how you when you're sitting down with your therapist and they're like, "What are you in for?" And you're like, "All right, let me show you something. I brought some barbacoa and a very thin layer of guac, and I have this, you know." And you just kind of go from there, and you'd be like, "These were the eyeballs, and they popped out." And you keep going, but I don't know what comes out of the other side of that. I think it's some fly, like a husk, like who's kind of half there. I don't know.
It's Brundlefly and telepod. So it's Brundlefly pod. Monstrosity.
And that sounds like a cell phone company or something.
The Brundlefly crawls towards her. At this point, she's picked the shotgun up, and he can't speak, obviously, because he lost his jaw, but I imagine he is in some pretty serious agony, because, like, the back half of him is, like, part, like, machine, like, parts are in there from the telepod, and, like, fly goo, and people goo, and bones, and all kinds of stuff, and this is what gets me, is that flies, like, the Brundlefly's pleading eyes, like he's got these like black eyes that should be lifeless and no emotion or expression, and yet they plead somehow as he picks up the shotgun, the end of the shotgun, with his little mandibles, probably. They're probably called mandibles, I don't know. And then points it at his head, and he's like, you know, you know what you got to do, Ronnie. And she's like, no, I don't want to. And then she just blows his face just apart into many pieces.
Yep.
Yeah. Because
that's so awesome.
She can see how much he is suffering, and she's so distraught because this is someone she cares about, and he's suffering and begging for death, and she has to make this horrible choice. And for his own, like, just to have mercy.
Yeah, she's killed that baby daddy, you know, because we never did get that abortion. We were about to, and we got stolen.
That's true.
It does leave a setup for the sequel. And she mercy kills him after he pleads, and literally she falls to her knees, just absolutely devastated, racked with like just terror, guilt, like all of these sorrow, like all of these feelings that you just can't name, and then it just fades to black. I love that. I love there's no denouement. There's no more dialogue. It's just like Brundlefly is blah, and then just tragedy, movie's over. I love it.
Yep. Amazing.
I do like that when Cronenberg like destroys his last bit of practical effects, he's like, I'm done with the movie.
He's like, I ain't clean. Can you get the guys in that cleaned up after the baboon sitch? Because I don't want to deal with this. But that's it, guys. That brings us to the end of The Fly. What is so, Travis? Now, you notoriously hated this film. What feeling, as soon as it fades to black, what was the feeling that was in your chest? Like, what did you feel?
In that moment, I was like, you know, I bet Kevin is going to blame me for not liking the movie, even though I, right now, in this moment, as I'm watching this movie a lot.
Uh-huh.
I can't wait to talk to Kevin about it to see what kind of horse excuse he gives for not liking it, because I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I did like it. And I had seen this one before. This wasn't a first watch for me. I'd seen it before. I liked it more this time. I took more appreciation in the special effects. I thought that the story was a little bit better connected. I think the first time you watch it, you're just wowed by what you're experiencing and what's on screen and what you're feeling. But I was able to kind of watch it with more of like an I knew what was going to happen. And I liked it a lot more. I think it's definitely a rewatcher despite its grotesqueness.
Now, Haley, you've seen the film multiple times. Boop fades to black. What do you feel like? Can you go back to the first time Haley saw this movie and like what she felt in her heart after that fade to black?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same every time. Even that first time, like, it's just pure awe, like true awe. It leaves you with so much to think about, and it's profound in a lot of different ways and deeply upsetting and disturbing. And yeah, there's just so much to contemplate about how it all went wrong and got to that place. I
didn't need to contemplate. And it's like I said, safety wise, do not drink and teleport.
Very important lesson.
It's true. I also like that there are no like wasted scenes. There's nothing in here that I felt like needed to be cut. Everything kind of matters. They wasted way more baboons than scenes.
Agreed.
Well, who cares what we think? Travis, how about some of those post-credit...
Wait.
What?
I want to hear what you thought, Kevin.
Yeah, oh, Kevin.
When it fades to black, what did you feel?
Yeah, Kevin.
Empty.
Truly.
But I feel that all the time. So it's... I think the thing that I was feeling is like... Because, like, I don't necessarily emotionally identify with the characters in this film. Like, I just didn't feel like I really connected with them. But until that very end, because you know that despite the insect politics that don't exist, he's still fighting in his own madness, in his own, this beast, this insect that's taking over his brain to preserve the one thing in his life that he loved more than his science, and it was this connection with this girl and potentially this family that he could have had, and it drives him to this horrible length that he can't see, and then in the end he just begs for it to be over. I think that sticks with me a little more than, you know, any other way that they could have ended it. Like, and it didn't it never turned into a horror movie for her. She was never expressly like he was trying to hurt her. And I think that's a more interesting dynamic than you could have gotten in a film like this. So I'm left with thinking that versus, you know, empty also.
Thanks, Kevin. That's great. I feel better now that I've heard you say all that.
Yeah, right? But again, guys, who cares what we think? What about those post-credit reviews?
Oh, I've got some. Did you want me to read them?
Yeah, if you would.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right, great. Yeah, post-credit reviews here. We got a 5-star. This is a rewatch from Camelot, spelled all kinds of different ways. October of 2020.
Okay.
This movie taught me two important life lessons. Number one. Buy duplicates of a single outfit so you don't waste brain power trying to decide what to wear. And number two, and we've said it a couple times, don't drink and teleport.
Thank you.
Right?
So glad.
Thank you.
People understand.
Jesus.
And I might have done it. I might have done it. If I had invented a teleportation device and I had whiskey, there is a high probability that I would have done that. And thank God for this film talking me out of it. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you, David Cronenberg.
Phew.
Yeah. Don't drink and podcast either.
Travis is drinking alcohol, guys.
That's not true. Up next, we've got five more stars. Okay.
A lot of people liked it.
Okay. Yeah. This is a rewatch by Al of a couple days ago. Okay. Al says, and I'm going to give Al a bit of an accent because when people don't punctuate correctly, I assume they're like me. Don't remember when I first watched this, but easily one of my all-time favorite horrors. How terrifying is it to lose yourself? How freeing is it to become something new altogether? This film is the gold standard of practical effects from the 80s, grotesque and visceral and sickening. One of my favorite performances from Goldblum. He plays Seth Brundle flawless.
Dang.
Well said, right? Well said. I get some good ones in here.
Couldn't agree more.
Al's with it. We got another five stars from Fungi72. This is just a couple days ago. Five stars. They say, perfect. When your kids ask you what love is, tell them it's when Veronica hugs Seth covered in his fly juices. That is love.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I actually love that she brought that scene up. Yes, absolutely. 100%.
Or, I mean, frankly, cutting off his back hair while he's eating ice cream in his underwear. I mean, that to me, that says love.
True.
I won't even hug my wife if she's eating garlic, you know?
He's
so
like
that is insane.
Super gooey in that scene when she hugs him. He is gooey.
And is that, remind me, is that post him, we didn't mention it when we covered the plot, I can't remember or not, but this is the first time when he like throws up to eat the donuts in front of her, and then does she hug him before that or after that?
After. And after the ear has fallen off as well. And he's like gooey. And she hugs him on the missing ear side, no less.
Wow. It's because they didn't put makeup on the other side, but yeah.
It is pure love. Pure love.
That is.
This is a real romance, okay, guys?
It is.
You know, anybody can love each other when things are going right, but when things are going wrong and your ear falls up and you vomit to eat a donut, that's love.
Exactly. You got it. That's it.
All right. Okay. One star from Maggie.
No, I want to go back to this, Travis. You seem so uncomfortable that we're talking about love. Hey, Travis, I want you to know I love you, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
He would hug you if you were all gooey and your ear fell off.
Mm-hmm. I would. I would hug you. I would hug you gingerly, though, because I was like, I don't want nothing else to fall off, you know, but like hard enough where you felt safe.
Well, that's great. We'll have to meet up sometime and schedule a hug.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. One star from Maggie. This is from a couple years ago. Maggie says, and Maggie's not happy, okay? This is one star from Maggie. Maggie says, technically, she committed to bestiality.
Oh, my God.
Technically.
Get the hell out of here, Maggie.
Yeah, right? Wait. Say it again. Technically. She committed to bestiality?
Yeah, like what? Even...
I'm not sure what it means. Also, I don't know that it applies. I think it might be like insectuality. I don't know. Are flies beasts? I don't know. Now I'm getting pedantic. Look at me, Maggie.
Yeah, Maggie.
That sounds like a snarky teenager.
Yeah, Maggie. You're a snarky teenager. Why don't you buzz off?
Ha! Get her, Kev. Get her.
Yeah, oh.
I know. Travis, do you have any more of those? You still got any more of those post-credit reviews?
No, that's it. Sorry, if you wanted more, that's all I brought.
Yeah, no, you just left us on a downer there, man. But I appreciate you going out there into the wild and finding them. Haley, what would be your post-credit review of this film?
Oh.
Not to put you on the spot, but, you know, it is your podcast.
This is a cinematic treasure about love and caring for someone as they deteriorate mentally and physically, and you shouldn't miss it. Best practical effects of just about anything out there. Yeah.
Well, on a budget of $15 million, The Fly went on to gross $60.6 million. That's successful. And it even won an Academy Award for Best Makeup. No surprise for anybody here. Well, the 1986 Fly was actually a remake that, in terms of quality and just sheer grossness, surpassed the original 1958 film, which, by the way, was based on a short story originally published in Playboy magazine. See? People do read it for the articles, or in this case, the stories. Now, the film spawned a sequel, The Fly 2, which was worse in just about every conceivable way, but mostly because G.E.N.A. Davis wasn't in it. There was also a 2015 five-issue comic book miniseries that was a pseudo-continuation of the story. There's an absolutely stellar Simpsons parody, which I think was on one of the Treehouse of Horror. It kind of throws back more to the 50s one with being like a nice little mix. So if you haven't seen it, definitely seek that out. Now, what makes this film like so impactful is that slow deterioration of a person into something worse, much worse. Some would say a monster, and of course, a generous helping of that body horror to boot. Now, it takes what would be an absolute silly romp, kind of based on the premise, and turns it into a film that sticks with the viewer long after watching. Though, considering the film was produced by Mel Brooks, a zany comedy, you know, that would also landed for me. I would have been fine with that. But instead, we got this classic horror sci-fi mashup that I would not recommend to the faint of heart or tummy.
Well said, Kev.
Well said.
Thank you. Now, Travis, you've got a little hint for our next film that we are pulling out of the bin, which we have already pulled out of the bin. Haley was a witness. She can confirm we did pull it out of the bin.
We did the ritual, yes. And I certainly was prepared with a hint, Kev. I'm glad you turned it to me. Well, I will say, speaking of Simpsons, that's one hint. And also, honk honk, watch out. I haven't seen it, Kev.
You know, maybe if you took it to the max.
Ah.
Your hint.
My Simpsons reference does hit, though.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. I like it. Well, I want to especially, Haley, thank you for tolerating us. We really appreciate that. And also just bringing your passion and wit and talent to this podcast.
It has been a true honor and a true pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, you might like our other podcast. You can catch Kevin on the tabletop gaming podcast, Blue Peg, Pink Peg. You can find me on every other podcast out there. I'm on Drunk Friend, Polykill, Tales of the Lesser Medium, We Got Goosebumps, and Uncle Doug's DVD Bin. That's right. I'm on the podcast you're currently listening to. You can catch me and Haley on stage with the Big Lit Conspiracy if you're in the Roanoke area. And if you're lucky, you might catch Kevin too. You never know. He's like the Easter Bunny. You never know when he's going to pop out. If you want to keep this podcast buzzing around, support the Polymedia Network on Patreon. We have we got to thank our pal Harvest Black for the gene splicing theme music. And just like our Uncle Doug always says,
you can't penetrate beyond society's sick gray fear of the flesh. Drink deep or taste not of the plasma spring. Uh-oh. Craig's become sentient.